Well, some of us have all kinds of social anxieties when it comes to doing new things, don't we? For me, it's charades. If I'm in a group and you ask me to do charades, my internal world implodes on me. I get all kinds of anxieties. Perhaps for you, it's a friend who invited you to drinks with their workmates. And being in an unfamiliar social environment like that gives you the heebie-jeebies. And maybe you've taken a much bigger step. Maybe you've had to cross cultures and you weren't quite sure what to expect at the other end. For others, it's stepping into church for the first time that triggers our anxieties. That it's a whole unexpected world when we enter into church for the first time. From the outside looking in, we know they talk about Jesus there, yet many of the other practices that they have remain unknown to us. It's this question of unknown expectations into a new community that is part of our passage this morning. Ruth, if you remember, was an immigrant to the Jewish world. More precisely, she was an immigrant to the covenant community of God, to the people who claimed to possess the promises and blessings of God, the church of the Old Testament. If there was any truth to this, if these people really did possess the promises and blessings of God, if there was any truth to this, we might want to consider what Ruth would find among such people who claimed to be the people in possession of God's promises and blessings. For a start, whoever wrote down these events for us in the book of Ruth begins in this chapter by identifying for us a very significant individual. Look at verse 1 with me. It reads, "Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz." The verse sits like a title above all else that follows. It is the stated plotline that holds the rest of the chapter together. Both Naomi and Ruth, their futures are somehow bound up with the identity of this person. This significant figure, Boaz, would be instrumental to the future of Naomi and Ruth. He was a worthy man. He was also a mysterious relative. And he happens to be from the same clan as Naomi's now dead husband. Why is that significant? Just as a note of explanation to you, in ancient cultures like this, family connections were highly significant. They were highly prized. They were highly significant. Like Māoridom, where one traces your ancestry, where you trace your whakapapa all the way through, through iwi, through hapū, through whānau, there was a similarity there in the ancient Jewish world where you traced your family connections, the important connections that you have to people through tribe, clan, and family. They were important signifiers of who you are and who you were in a community. Keep this in mind. The fact that Boaz, a worthy man, was a clan relative of Naomi's will prove to be a highly significant detail later on. For now, we want to think about Ruth. We want to start to see things through her eyes. Think about Ruth coming into a whole new community as an outsider. Remember, she's an immigrant. She's a Moabite. She's not an Israelite. She's completely new to this community of the Jewish people. She is new to the church of the Old Testament. And add to that that she is a widow. Her husband had died, and her sole companion into this new community is also a widow. Her mother-in-law, who had happened to lose her husband as well. And then add to all of those things the fact that they were poor. An immigrant, widowed, and poor. Verse 2. Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain, after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." We know they were poor because only the poor gleaned. Only the poor gleaned. To glean is simply to collect the leftovers from the harvest. It's to go and gather up the bits that the harvesters missed. That was your sustenance. That's how you got through a day. You gleaned. I don't know if you've ever been to an orchard, but a friend of ours took us through an orchard block that had just been harvested. It looked pretty bare. If you just walked into it, it looked pretty bare. But if you lifted a few leaves, you could still find some very good fruit, enough to fill a number of supermarket bags in a short amount of time. That is what gleaning is. It is to go in after the harvesters and gather up a little something for yourself in order to live. Ruth had gone to find such leftovers in a grain field, not an orchard, but a grain field. And this practice, this provision for the poor to glean food, was in fact commanded by God. God said, "You ought to structure your society this way. If you are the covenant people, if you do possess the promises and blessings of God, this is how you ought to live. This is how you ought to steer your society." God commanded the covenant people to facilitate this practice of looking after the poor through gleaning. God taught them, "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to the edge. Don't take it all. Leave some. You shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am the Lord your God." If you farmed, you left a little bit for someone else who had far less than you. Faithful adherence to the scriptures was to shape the covenant people of God. And not knowing what to expect, this would have been a tremendous relief to Ruth's hardship. As an immigrant, you're going into a new nation, a new land, you have nothing, you're poor, you're widowed, and among them you discover actually they have this practice of gleaning. There is a way for me to live here as long as these people would be faithful to their scriptures and do as God had instructed. There would be a huge relief for someone like Ruth. And her relief from hardship brings us to this significant figure called Boaz. Look at verse 3 with me. "Ruth set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech." If you're reading this story, this is one of those moments where you're supposed to go, "Oh, really? Oh, really? What a coincidence." She stumbles into a field belonging to a stranger named Boaz, who happens to be a relative by marriage. What a coincidence. And the Christian says, "Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? What a coincidence." It is crazy, but it's not unbelievable, because our God ordains that all things must work according to the counsel of his will. This happened because God said it should happen this way. And then you take a look at what kind of guy Boaz was. Verse 1 already told us that he's a worthy man. He was a man of standing, is what that means. He had mana, he had substance to his character. And as we get to know him in this chapter, he was obviously an individual who was faithful in the covenant community. He did as God required of him. He was a faithful believer. Notice the first words that come out of his mouth in this chapter is a blessing. It's the first thing he says. He says to his reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Now, in case you're thinking this is just simply well-wishing someone dressed up in religious language, you have to consider that Boaz is invoking the covenant name of God here. He is calling on Yahweh to be with them. No one in the covenant community does that lightly. Nobody trivializes the covenant name of God. Boaz obviously had an earnest desire to see God impress all his covenant blessings and obligations upon his workforce. The Lord, the covenant God of Israel, be with you. This is not a trivial or trite well wish before a day's work. This is a true and sincere blessing by a man who is faithful in the covenant community, a worthy man indeed. And then he notices Ruth. He notices Ruth. He says, "Whose young woman is this?" Whose young woman is this? In our culture, we clam up in shock, don't we, that the Bible seems to talk about women as property in someone else's possession. I don't know why we clam up this way. If you listen to the radio for any length of time, people sing possessively of one another all the time in creepy ways. But somehow when we think that the Bible does this, we freak out. We clam up in all kinds of shock. But I do want you to be at ease. This is not actually what's going on. It may look like that when you first read it, when you hear someone say, "Whose young woman is this?" You may think, man, is she just a piece of property to be handed around to be possessed? No, that's not it. I want you to be at ease. Please recognize that Boaz is asking a kind-hearted question at this point in time. He's asking something like, "Whose clan does she belong to? Whose clan does she belong to?" Remember, in a culture where families and clans were obligated to look after one another, Boaz is simply inquiring, why is Ruth gleaning when her clan should be looking after her? Why is Ruth out here looking after herself when someone else is supposed to be doing that for her? It's a kind question. It's a kind question from a worthy man. Of course, in the details are explained to Boaz, Ruth was an outsider. She's an immigrant. She's a Moabite. She's not from around here, Boaz. She came here as a loyal companion to her mother-in-law, Naomi, returning to her homeland and to the people of God. Now notice, when Boaz are given these details, when he finds out she's a foreigner, she's not even an Israelite, notice how much larger Boaz's heart grows towards her. Though his laws obligated him to leave some of his field for gleaning by foreigners, He pursued this obligation not with begrudging duty, but with an intensive degree of personal care. He took Ruth under his protection. He does far more than what he's obligated to do. He takes her under his protection, and he says to her, in effect, reap my fields. Stay close to those who are associated with my name, and be at ease. My men won't be sleazy toward you, even though you're an unmarried woman. My men won't be the sleazy kind of men to take advantage of you. And then remember, we're trying to look at this through the eyes of Ruth. The question all along for her has been, what kind of people will she find when she goes to the covenant community of God? When she finally gets there, what will these people be like? Will they believe and live as they are taught in their scriptures? Will they imitate the generosity of their God, whom she has maybe heard by this time has said to be a generous God? Will they be anything like that? And this is what Ruth has come to discover. Within the covenant community, there is a worthy man. Someone who resisted the temptation to live as though morality was simply a flexible social construct. Someone who knew God and related to him faithfully. Ruth discovers, even if so few do, this man Boaz embodied something of what it truly means to be a covenant community member, faithfully shaped by God in his word. And this brings us to this heartwarming moment. Look at verse 10 with me. Then Ruth fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner?" Remember, Boaz could have simply just let her glean and wiped his hands. He's fulfilled his obligations according to his law. But he took notice. He took notice of Ruth, the foreigner, and then exceeds his obligations. Why would he do that? Why would a landlord treat you better than what you deserve? Better than what the law requires? Why would he go above and beyond to treat an immigrant with such dignity and care? Verse 11 through to 12. Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and your mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Boaz has now connected the dots. Ruth was loyal to one of his relatives, Naomi. But Boaz's generosity is far more than a repayment for her loyalty. He's not saying, it's not a tit for tat kind of thing. You were loyal to Naomi, and so I'll repay you your loyalty. There's far more going on here. Boaz recognized that Ruth had placed her faith in the God of Israel. She had become a true believer, a true Israelite, a true son of Abraham by faith. She had come to take refuge in God. And in so doing, she found grace upon grace upon grace for her soul. She found a field to sustain her, a worthy man to protect her, a community where true faithfulness was still alive, even though these were the days when the judges ruled. And still there is more. Still there is more. Boaz, the worthy man, not only protects, he provides. And he does so generously. Hear it for yourself in verses 14 through to 16. Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers and he passed to her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." Boaz's provision is so generous. He is laying it on for her, isn't he? And yet, here's Ruth with no true idea of the significance of any of these events, or even the true significance of Boaz. At this point in time, Boaz is simply a generous landowner to her. He is simply being abundantly generous. But she does not yet know why he is so significant to her life, to her future. So then, why does the passage draw our attention to the fact that he is a worthy man and significantly related to Naomi? Why is this emphasized in the passage? When Naomi found out, this is later on the day, when she found out about Ruth's extraordinary encounter, she revealed, "The man, Boaz, is a close relative of ours." And one of our redeemers. Earlier I asked you to keep in mind the family connection between Naomi and Boaz. The family connection was important because it functioned as another safeguard in that culture. It was a safeguard to Naomi and the family line. The substance of their God-given law required that if a man dies without having children, his brother must marry the widow and raise up children for his brother. This was one of the safeguards in that culture. Being relationally tied together, this law meant Boaz was a potential rescuer, a potential redeemer, a potential husband who could reestablish the family line. Incidentally, it is also because of this God-given law that a previously bitter Naomi could once again find hope. Remember, Naomi once spoke wounded words, spoke raw and wounded words. She said, "I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. The Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me. And now, she says, may Boaz be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." What a transformation. All because someone could apply the law of God faithfully. For all our misgivings and suspicions about what the Old Testament teaches, at least here we can see that God's laws are not only wise toward the heavy-hearted of this world, but also able to restore their hopes when it is applied faithfully. Of course, all of this episode is illustrative. It is commentary on the gospel, which is what I'd like us to think about now as we close. Firstly, all of us share something in common with either Ruth or Naomi when we come into the community of the church, when we come into the covenant community of God. We all share something in common with either Ruth or Naomi. And I know that may come as a bit of a shock to some of you guys who were flexing and inflating your chests as though you are the Boaz in this story. You're not. That title belongs to Christ and Christ alone. You share something in common with Naomi or Ruth. In coming to the covenant community of God, the church, we come either like Naomi, returning to the people we once left, or we come like Ruth, as outsiders, as foreigners to the people of God. This is how the New Testament speaks about these things. Remember that at one time you Gentiles, or should we say foreigners, were separated from Christ, alienated from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. If you feel this very keenly today, if you feel like an outsider to the church, like a foreigner who has stumbled upon an unfamiliar community, you're in good company. You're in good company. Many of us would also remember what it was like to come to a church for the first time, to step through the doorway and take a seat and wait. Many of us will remember what it was like to place our faith in God for the first time. When we had to leave behind old beliefs and customs and practices and learn the ways of God among the people of God. Some of us will well remember how we stumbled along, the mistakes we've had to make, and the patience and kindness that covenant members had to show us. So you're in good company if you feel that you've stumbled into an unfamiliar community today. We're all here for the same reason. We've heard news of a Redeemer. We heard that there is a worthy man and that man, Jesus Christ, who offers us not only his protection, but his generous provision. That worthy man, Jesus, took all the obstacles standing between us and his familial love and nailed it to a cross, his cross. The obstacles that kept us from his familial love were obstacles of sin. But having forgiven us all our trespasses and cancelling the record of debt that stood against us with its legal demands, this he set aside, nailing it to a cross. That's why we are here. This is why we have come. We confess, all of us, that we are not our own redeemers. We are here because we heard there is a redeemer. We have come to Jesus, the true redeemer, and we say with Ruth, why? Why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? And Jesus' kind-hearted reply confirms to each and every one of us, you have found favor in his eyes because of what you have come to do by faith. We have come to take refuge in God.